Hi everybody, it's Thursday night, it's 8 o'clock in the UK, and it's time for our live podcast going out here on Podbean, going out elsewhere as well. So whether you're listening to this on the Twitter sphere, or should I call that the X world, I don't know what, wherever it is anyway, you're all very, very welcome. Thanks for coming along and spending the next hour, maybe hour and a half with me. So I hope this finds you all well. So I see a warm welcome to everyone. I see Jed, and I see your friend City Troll is floating around. Anne-Marie O'Sullivan, good to see you, Anne-Marie. Nath, good to see you as well. Leslie, of course, great to have you with us. Dennis, Adrian, Farmer D. Anyway, thanks to all of you guys. Thanks for being here. And as always, we have a pretty intense agenda ahead of us. We're going to talk, has World War III been averted or not? We'll chat about that. Don't you want to talk about Paddy, hang on, Nigel Farage and the perennial tease. Will he come to frontline politics or won't he? What about puberty blockers and the sort of freaks that think these are a good idea? Cloud seeding in Dubai. That's an interesting one. The attempted return of monkeypox. So all that stuff, my friend. So we've got loads of things to be chatting to you about. So I hope you'll find this enjoyable. And thanks for being here. Make sure you're sitting comfortably as we go through the time ahead. Now, actually, as is my wont, so sometimes I put all these topics up, you know, so we're going to discuss them. And then something comes along and I look at it and I thought, I think I might add this. So actually, the topic I want to add, because it amused me so much, was did you see in Scotland? Well, two things happened in Scotland, actually, which seriously entertained me. In the first instance, Nicola Sturgeon's husband, Peter Morrell, was arrested again. And so, that was good. But then even better, did you see the Scottish government came along and said, regarding our commitment to get to our net zero emissions target by 2030, we've had a big think about it, and it can't be done. It can't be done. So we're not going to do that now. So yes, Gauram, SNP are the gift that keeps giving. And here's the question I've got for Paddy and for Jed. And if Adrian, if you want to slide in, come on in. Adrian's just coming in now to join us. We're seeing this farce in Scotland today where they're backtracking. Now, the politicians are backtracking on their completely unrealistic, stupid, nihilistic, economically disastrous net zero further reductions by 2030. How many other countries are going to follow this? You know, how many other governments are going to have to go, oh yeah, we virtue signaled, but now we are, we've had a bit of a change of mind, and we are, we're not doing it anymore. So I wonder who wants to come in on this one, the change of heart by the demented Scottish SNP government. Adrian, I'll start with you.
The change of mind on the net zero. We all know it's a farce. We all know it is not achievable. You know, net zero brings us back to the Middle Ages. Our society has moved on way too much. There's not enough solar, wind, power generated to fuel electric vehicles and businesses and all that. It is just a grift, a con, and it's been exposed.
I mean, honestly, it's interesting because Paddy, I mean, you've got it in the States as well. The government's making these completely unsustainable, unachievable promises, which has massive impacts on things like the car industry, for example, and all of that.
They're not just
and then they go ahead and say, we've changed our mind now.
They're not just making promises. And the thing is, they're going to have a real problem doing that over here, because they've got multiple states that have already have bans in place. As a matter of law, bans in place. But, you know, in the next 10 years, all you can't buy an automobile in those states. And their goal, and there's no dissuading them at this point, Biden administration has determined that we will no longer use the gasoline engine. And this is also the stance of the Democrat Party, and they're going to try, and it hasn't dawned yet on the American public, because 90% of us don't pay any attention to what the hell's going our politicians are doing. And it hasn't dawned on them that within 10 years, you'll no longer be able to work. You'll no longer be able to live. You'll no longer be able to get to the grocery store, to school, to anywhere, because, you know, you can't get gas. You can't drive a car. You can't run a petrol, as you call it, engine. You know, it's ridiculous.
Well, you see, the thing about it is that I found interesting was, I think it was yesterday or in the last day or two, the global sales of electric cars have actually dropped. And I think Tesla's had to lay off, thousands of employees because people don't want these things. I mean, they can't force us to get them. And yet this was sold to us as, oh, yeah, but if we all go into our clean green EVs, then we'll get to net zero. But none of it's going to work, Jed. I mean, you know, this is unsustainable. So the SNP government is the first very woke government to roll back from this insane net zero commitment by 2030.
I like driving in my car. It's quite a Jaguar.
That's madness. Okay? That's
it is. And yeah. Exactly. And net zero is madness. It's madness on steroids. And the thing is, they say, all right, we say they're rolling back. Germany's rolling back. Okay. Germany is pulling back. In fact, it's got the brakes on that hard, they're glowing red. Okay. Mm. On this net zero, because they can see their industry's falling apart. The big business is pushing back, saying, well, you know, we're losing billions on this. And obviously, to add to that, they no longer have a gas pipeline with cheap gas coming from Russia because they've cut off the nose to spite the face. And obviously, the West blew up the pipeline and then blamed Russia for blowing up their own pipeline. Yeah, of course they did.
Nah, the Jews did it.
The thing is, the thing is, yeah, the whole global net zero cabal, it will come tumbling down, because when it starts to hit Joe and Jane in the pocket, when they can't afford that, what was a £500 banger that got Joe and Jane to work and the kids to school every day, yeah, when they can't afford to put that £500 banger on the road because the road tax has gone through the roof because it's a petrol or a diesel, the car insurance has gone through the roof, saying that you can't get EV insurance at the moment, but let's say the insurance goes through the roof for petrol and diesel cars, and Joe and Jane are going, hang on, I never voted for this. Why is my freedoms being curtailed by a bunch of people who actually fly around in private jets, go tens of thousands of miles via jet, tens of thousands of miles by a big 4x4 steel plated, armor plated, and dozens of cars and outriders with them? They're all petrol, they're all diesel. Why can't I have that? It's the elites against us, and the whole pack of cards will come tumbling down. But I'll just add this. Those that have jumped on the bandwagon with the heat pumps and the solar panels, I'd love solar panels on my house, not because I want to be green, because the cost of energy is through the roof. And therefore, if I can use my roof to generate some energy to cut my costs, I will do. But I can't. I can't have solar panels on my roof. My house was built in 1900. It will not take solar panels. The roof is not shaped and facing the right direction. So I can't go down that road. I can't have a heat pump. Why? Because I'm in a Victorian terraced house along with hundreds and hundreds of other Victorian terraced houses. I've got a cobbled back street at the back of my house. I can't do all these net zero things. I can't have an electric car because I have nowhere to plug it in at home. Oh, but don't worry, they'll cut a groove in the path. Yeah, of course I'll cut a groove in the path. And I tell you what, when I lay that cable and I plug my car in and I go to sleep at night, and then some, I nearly swore them, then some lunatic cuts the cable and steals it for the copper, what am I going to do? Because they're doing that with the chargers. This whole net zero is a con, and it will come.
Yep, I think you're right, Jed. I think you're right. And it's interesting watching the SNP hit the brakes, do a reverse turn. They actually blamed the UK government. They said, it's nothing to do with us in Scotland. It's the UK government because it didn't give us enough money. So it's pathetic
stuff. Is the SNP trying to save itself for the election, do you think? Do you think they see the writing on the wall and this is maybe a policy to try and...
Oh, I agree, Adrian, I agree. But the writing's all over the wall. Humza is heading for the buffers in some style. And, I'm really looking forward to the day after, Adrian, the Scottish election, even though I know Labour will get in and that's bad.
I just hope he's not going above 20 miles an hour because Drakeford might have a heart attack.
Oh, well, Drakeford just was given an award. Have some respect. Mark Drakeford, that political giant in Wales, was given an award, get this, for his performance during COVID. Can you believe that?
I'm sorry, I'm going to laugh, because I think the only thing that the SNP are good at is pissing other people's money up the wall, because they blame the UK government for every single failing that they've ever had. Now they're blaming the net zero rollback on the British government. They can never take responsibility for their own action. But I tell you what, their own actions are catching up with them, with hate speech law, with possible arrest of certain members of, or what was certain members of the SNP over the past 24 hours or so. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I can say this, so you tell me if I need to say allegedly corruption is catching up with them. And no matter how many times they try and blame the UK government, the Scottish people are now awake to how corrupt the SNP as a whole have been in Scotland and how they've run that country into the ground, and they spent every single penny they had and more. And then when the British government said, you're having no more, the bowl is now empty, then what happens? We have, well, we've seen over the past 2 years, haven't we, with a loss of a leader and God, a second rate. I mean, in fact, I'd rather have, who was that second rate bank clerk that Farage talked about in the EU before we left? I can't remember his name. But I'd rather have him in Scotland than what they've got in the SNP.
Well, as I say, look, I saw that news. I laughed at the fact that Peter Morrell, Nicola Sturgeon's husband, has been arrested again. I thought it was funny. And secondly, I laughed at the fact that this retreat on the climate change targets has been announced. I mean, it's all part of in fact, we have our Scottish correspondent entering the studio as I speak. Our good friend Grantonio has entered the studio. So I'm not sure. Maybe he'll be a character witness for Peter Morrell. I don't know if he would be so brave or mentally unwell to do that. But anyway, I'll just throw that one in anyway. Listen, let's... hi, Grantonio. come in whenever you want, Grantonio. So look, back on the proper agenda for this one. And again, I'm not doing this in order. I'm doing this in the way I want to do it. So, right. And Paddy, I'm very interested in your views in this one. I suspect some of us are going to be on the same page and some of us mightn't be. So Dubai, did you see the floods? Did you see all that stuff? And I did a podcast about it today, obviously, because it fascinated me, because I've been there multiple times. I like Dubai. I like Dubai because it's dry, really good sunshine, and it's really nice. And then you get this deluge. And then this is the best bit. The establishment media says, oh, yeah, it was a bit of cloud seeding going on. The Dubai authorities talk about, we were doing cloud seeding 2 days before the storm. And yes, former day, it was a very impressive amount of water. But I thought it was only mad tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists who believed in geoengineering, in bioengineering, who believed that they can affect the weather. So it doesn't surprise me, because the RAF were doing it here in the UK back in the late 40s, early 50s. If anyone's ever been to the Devon, little Devon village of Lynmouth, and I have, yeah, you can see that loads of people were killed back then when there was this massive flood, and the RAF subsequently, 20 years ago, said, yeah, we were doing stuff then, back then. You think they keep doing that stuff? So I am completely convinced that there is such a thing as geoengineering, call it whatever you want. And Paddy, I know you mentioned HAARP, but I think, you know, you've got countries like China can do it, the Middle Eastern countries do it. And I'm simply asking the question, do you think the US and the UK can do it? I would think so. Over to you guys.
Well, I'll jump in on this, David, because I've literally, and I didn't know at the time, but I did find it quite fun, quite curious. However, back in 1991, there was a little bit of a conflict, wasn't there, to do with Kuwait I'll say the Indian American, so Paddy understands what I'm saying. Iraq, okay? For everybody else, it's Iraq, okay? And there was this little bit of conflict. However, I'll tell you what doesn't work well in rainy weather, and that is chemical warfare. Why? Because the rain, believe it or not, washes it away. What happened for the 100 hours of Gulf War I? It peed it down. We hadn't had rain for months. It peed it down for 100 hours. And then, believe it or not, when the cessation of hostilities was announced, the sun came out and stayed out. And stayed out for the remainder of my time while I was in Iraq. Isn't it funny how it rained for 100 hours intensely? And actually, the best thing, the best defense against chemical warfare is rain. Because you can't spread a gas because the rain pushes the gas down. So isn't it funny?
Well, isn't it funny, Paddy? I'll come to you, Paddy, and then you, Adrian. Paddy, isn't it funny that when the UK went into lockdown back in April 2020, 4 years ago this month, we enjoyed the best weather ever. People said, gosh, yeah, we're being told to stay at home because of this deadly virus, but, oh, it's beautiful weather.
Yeah, well, that was God laughing at us.
Or Satan, somebody.
Yeah, that was a power than us laughing at us. You're locked up. Here you go. It's beautiful out. You see the birds and the bees, but you stay in that house. You're going to spread. You're going to kill people. Put that mask on.
So what do you think, Paddy, about what we've seen in Dubai and them openly talking about cloud seeding? What do you think about it?
The technology to manipulate weather has existed for a few decades. But the thing is with it, it's a temporary thing. You can't change the system. You can affect the system and cause it to rain. You can affect the system system and cause it to not rain and everything else. But but you cannot affect long term, and you cannot sustain. You can only either turn it on or turn it off, and you can't maintain it. It's just man is arrogant of an animal to think that he can control the physics on that scale, and we do not have that ability yet. We can change the weather. We can make it rain. We can make it not rain. We can reflect things off the atmosphere to disrupt other things and do that. But we cannot change we cannot change the weather. We cannot change the Earth's orbit. It's all controlled by the Earth's orbit and the fact that we are 2/3 water.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I just add, does that mean we can't have snow in Africa this Christmas time? Sorry, can't help it. It's like Tourette's.
Right. Jed's just been banned.
I don't know. Does it snow in Africa? I don't know. No, but, you're talking to an American. Does it? I don't count. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you don't know because Americans often don't know what goes on beyond their borders. But never mind about that.
Beyond our borders, it doesn't happen.
Adrian's been, hang on, Jet. Adrian's been sitting very patiently there, and I want Adrian to have a say. Adrian, we'll come back to you. You two in a second. Adrian, jump in.
Has mankind not learned that you cannot control Mother Nature? You may be able to make it rain, but you may not be able to control the amount of rain and where it's going to rain. That has caused billions of pounds worth of damage, delayed flights, you know, flooding and all that. And as much as the idea might be good where, you know, it's a desert, they want to bring water in, but you just cannot control Mother Nature and it is so dangerous. But if that's what they're admitting to, I guarantee you there's way more stuff that they're not admitting to yet because we have known about this for a while.
I think you're right, Adrian. No, those are good points as well. That's what they've admitted to. Clearly, it's been admitted. The mainstream media admit, yes, there is cloud seeding goes on. And as I said, it's been, Adrian, here in the UK, back in 52, there was that terrible incident in Lynmouth.
So they could say they're weather engineering, but they could actually be spraying us with all sorts of chemicals that we should not be exposed to as well.
Chemtrails, chemtrails.
But all that's going to fall down through the atmosphere, you know, and we'll breathe some of it in. It'll be on food that we eat and stuff like that.
Hey, Paddy, did I hear a cynical chemtrails from you there? Did I hear that? Are you disputing chemtrails?
I'm not disputing it. I'm just saying it's like, I don't know what the hell they're doing. They are, chemtrails are real. What they're trying to do with it is, you know, no one really knows. I think it's more, you know, what scares me is it's more biological than anything else. But like, you know, chemtrail, it's like you start with this stuff. You start, what you said, there's so many, like I said, information is like an onion. To everything that happens, everything you hear is a cover story for what really happened and what, you know, and that and what they're saying and what really happened is still a cover story for them. Like I said, they found the Titanic. How did they find the Titanic? Well, they were robbing a sunken ship of its nuclear weapons to go find the Titanic.
Yeah, the Olympic. Yeah, just correction there from Paddy. It was the Olympic that was found the Titanic.
I won't dispute that. The ship at the bottom of the ocean was found because they were picking the graves of a Russian nuclear vessel to steal the weapons and
but nothing we read. But I'll tell you, one interesting thing about this cloud seeding in Dubai is that it actually does. You know the way they talk about man-made climate change, and we laugh at them for the ludicrous and the pretentiousness of that. But in this case, it actually was man-made localized climate change in Dubai. It was the Dubai authorities seeding in the clouds and creating the rain. I mean, Adrian made the point about the damage that's caused. As I say, I've been there in Dubai. It's a wonderful place. It's really good. I looked at the images of Dubai Airport, and it looked like a sea. It was incredible, the damage that's caused. But it's an own goal. It is man-made climate change. I'll agree with David Attenborough.
No, it's man-made weather. Yeah, it is. Man-made weather. You can't claim change the climate. Yeah. It's man-made weather. You can create a storm. Yes. You can create a storm or dissipate a storm, but you can't change the climate.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
Language is important.
No, and Paddy, that's a fair point. Larry here says, where's Noah? That's a very good question. If he has any sense, he'll be building, I would try to build a spacecraft to get the hell off this planet, actually. That's what I'd like to build. Because, and since we gathered here last, we almost had World War III. And of course, this is what I want to open talk to you guys about. So we did have the whole Israel-Iran sort of face-off, whereby we saw number one, the Israelis attack the Iranian embassy in Damascus and kill some people. And then we had the Iranians, or Iranians, however we say it, Chet, he said, then launch this attack on Israel, which basically didn't do very much. Most of the drones were shot down, the ballistic missiles didn't make it. And now, as we speak tonight, we've heard that Netanyahu has said they won't reciprocate. There won't be an attack, a reciprocal attack back in Iran. Now, my own response is...
Not until January 20th.
Well, there won't be one, Paddy. We've got to then. At this point in time, I'm glad Israel has seen sense and not reciprocated, because you don't want a regional attack between two nuclear
powers.
Can
I speak here for a second?
Of course, Paddy, and you can come in, and then Jed, and then Adrian. Yeah,
okay.
You go, Jed.
The Israelis had the opportunity here. Number one, the Israelis, the United States ones, but they can't afford to have their supply chains cut off. That aside, the Israelis missed an excellent opportunity here. There's 150,000 Iranian missiles sitting in southern Lebanon aiming at Israel. They fire a few every day. And after this drone attack, it's a perfect excuse. Hey, they're firing at us every day. They could have destroyed that whole region of southern Lebanon, taking out those missiles, and it would have been the perfect retaliation, because it would not have been against Iran. It would have been against an active threat, against a daily threat that's a launch from it, and it would have been totally self-defense. And, you know, even though they would be condemned for it, it's still the perfect thing that they could have done.
Yeah, okay. So, I guess for me, the main thing is, Paddy, it didn't happen.
Saves lives. It saves. Nobody wants to see war. Nobody wants to see. Right now, they're still sitting there with 150,000 missiles that the picking up of a phone call, the Iranians can have launched at every inch of Israel from southern Lebanon. That threat could have been removed. That's lives that are waiting to be taken. And it's like there are, like I said, I know war is horrible. And I know I'm the warmonger of the group. And everything else, but I believe firmly that people don't attack you only for one reason, because they're afraid to attack you.
Here's an interesting point that Larry makes here on the stream. He says, if the defense dome is so good, how come peddling paragliders penetrated it, and British and American anti-aircraft defenses were needed? That's a good question.
Slow moving targets can penetrate. Just like think of Dune, and the bullets bounce off the force fields, but the knife penetrates. It's technical, but that's the reason. The slower the target, the harder it acts.
Yeah, I don't know, Jeb. Do you want to come in on this one?
I'm absolutely astonished they haven't annihilated Iran. We say Iran's a nuclear power. Do we know this for facts? We said that about Iraq, yeah, and weapons of mass destruction, whatever that phrase meant at the time. Because you could say nuclear weapons are weapons of mass destruction. So, it's just words, isn't it? Now, there is even a debate right now whether the UK actually has nuclear weapons, whether Russia and the US have nuclear weapons, or whether it's just all a ploy. I've got a silo here, Luke. It's got a rocket in it, and it's nuclear. Yeah. Because of the cost. Two, nuclear warheads degrade over years. You then have to do something with them in the end. But I'm absolutely astonished that in some regards, it shows restraint by Israel not to annihilate Iran. However, you've got to think of the geopolitical of that, because then they end up, in theory, fighting on two fronts, fighting in Gaza, justified, and then fighting at Paddy. I'll say it for Paddy, Iran. It's Iran. Fighting
it's Persia.
Iran. Yeah, I'm waiting for that one. I'm waiting for that one, mate. And then fighting them, and then the fighting, and it can only then global geopolitics escalates against Israel, although Israel is only defending its own people in its own territory. So, you know, sometimes you've got to lose the battle to win the war. And I think that's what Israel's done here.
Now, I'm going to come to Adrian. Before I do, just to let everyone know, if you want to hear a more radical take on this, over on the Hard Truth Rumble channel that I share with Alana Mercer, and I think the new one is, the new video was just dropped, Jed, today. We had a discussion recorded the other night. Now, bear in mind, Alana is Jewish. She's a rabbi's daughter, right? So, okay, you got that? And you want to listen to what she has to say about it. And put it like this, she is not standing in Israel's corner, whereas I'm a bit more neutral on these things. But anyway, sorry, Adrian, I've cut you off, but I wanted to plug the Israel video that I've put out with Alana. Adrian, over to you.
First of all, I think, like, once Ukraine gets into NATO, that's it. There's 30 countries automatically de facto at war with Russia. So you could say that's the start of World War III then. But as for Israel, if Israel was to truly strike Iran, every Muslim country in the world would then start trying to attack Israel and Israeli, you know, embassies and all across the world. So I don't think it's constrained. I just think Israel's just playing the smart game for the time being. I think once they can get their goal of cleaning Gaza out of Hezbollah and the terrorists, I think then you might see a different strategy from Israel.
Grantonio has entered the studio. Grantonio, do you want to put your pennies worth in on this one?
David, didn't Israel hit an Iranian embassy a few days before? Okay, I forgive me if any of you have mentioned that, but that seems like an act of war to me.
Yep.
By the way, I'm very pro-Israel. With regards to Iran attacking Israel, I mean, it's my understanding they were sending over ridiculously ineffective drones and missiles and all sorts, and the Iron Dome, it was nothing when faced with the Iron Dome. I just wonder if it was a bit of theatre there. They were appeasing their base. Look, we have attacked Israel in response to what they did to our embassy and all the people that Israel killed. I'm just wondering, never thought I'd say this, if it was actually Iran that was showing restraint in that one, throwing missiles and just the whole theatre.
Well, actually, Grantonio, that's brilliant setup, because if you go and listen or watch the Hard Truth video, I think Alana gave it the title, Iran Exercises Restraint, right? So 100% on it's actually the words chosen. Look, I mean, as I say, in all these things, my take on it is that I do think theatre is a great word. I think theatre does sum it up. Only absolutely insane people would want to see more war. I mean, we have enough war. That said, and Paddy, this is where I'll bring it back to you first. Chad, see, you want to come in, Chad? But, you know, I blame the Biden regime. I was on... you know, some of you might know an American guy called Stu Peters, and I was on his show the other day and talking about Russian intelligence, and that Russian intelligence is providing information on the whole corruption around the Biden regime and how it flows into Ukraine through the Burisma so-called oil company and how that funds terrorist attacks. Oh, yeah, all proven, all facts.
How dare you? The Biden regime? My God.
Well, it's the Obama regime. Maybe I should call it the Obama regime. And
the Biden policies are the Obama policies, but they're Biden's, because everything he does is plagiarized. He has no original thoughts. Yep. So he just wrote his name on Obama's team. But he also reassigned it. Obama has funded, given if you add up all relief of the sanctions waivers and everything else, Obama has pumped Biden has pumped $200 billion into the Iranian economy. He's paid for Hamas. He's paid for Hezbollah. He's paid for this war. He's funding both sides. The States is funding both sides. We're funding Iran, and we're funding Israel. And we're sitting here, and it's like, oh, I ain't going to be involved. You started all this, you idiot.
Yeah, you know, that is my view, basically. You're articulating my view. In a way, I don't get that exercised about Israel and Iran because it's the Biden, it's Washington and NATO, but it's Washington in particular. I mean, well, Paddy, they've wanted war with Iran for as long as I can remember.
Who?
The U.S., the Democrats.
The Democrats wanted peace with the Democrats want to cozy up to Iran. What did you say?
The Iran deal. I mean, what was that all about? And
that was about giving the Iranians the bomb because the Jews had the bomb. That was Obama. And that's Obama's idea of detente for the Middle East was the what ruled the world for 50 years, mutually assured destruction. And he didn't think it was fair that the Jews had the bomb and none of the Arab states, none of the hostile Arab states did. Pakistan does, Pakistan's a riddle in itself. But
that's another rogue state. Yeah, rogue state, Pakistan.
Yeah, but Obama's thing was he basically shut out Israel. And he befriended Iran. His adopted mother, or whatever his main advisor was an Iranian that he had in the White House. And she was I can't think of her name right off the top of my head, but it's like his thing was mutually assured destruction should be the balance in the Middle East, which is wrong because these people are religious fanatics. And as much as, you know, like I said, the Jews...
Both sides are religious fanatics.
Well, they are. They are. And but at least the Jews have had a reformation. It's called Catholicism. The Muslims have never had a reformation. And the Jews right now would not be attacking Hamas if they released all they have to do. You want to end this? Release all the hostages. It'll stop tomorrow. Hamas will maintain control, but they won't release the hostages.
Sorry, Jed, I see you'd wanted to come in there. I just wanted
to. No, I did, David. And it was only because you mentioned your piece with Alana Mercer. And for those that are watching this podcast, it's actually up on screen for you now. Go over, check that out, guys. It's a great chat between David and Alana. Obviously, I sit there in the background and I listen to this. And to find that a rabbi's daughter is against what Israel is currently doing. Now, whether I agree with either side of the debate that you can go and watch on Rumble on the David Vance and Alana Mercer Hard Truth channel. I'm not going to say it, but the thing is, why are we where we are? Why is the Middle East like it is? Why did I in 1990-91 end up in the Middle East? Why did I end up back in the Middle East in 2002? Why, or 2003, whatever it was? Why did we end up in Afghanistan for 10, 20 years, whatever it was? Why were we in Syria? Why are we not? I tell you why, because the region is full of, and I'd love to swear because it's the only way I could really truly express how I feel, but it's full of, for want of a different phrase, third world degenerates and people who have extremely low IQs, except Israel, but three extremely low IQs.
And the only thing third world degenerates.
Well, and the only thing is, well, we're bringing them in dinghies, aren't we? But the thing is, it's full of low IQ, and when you've got low IQ, you either are happy or fighting, and that is it. You can't have nuance. You can't have a debate because you don't know how to because you haven't got the IQ to have it, just like the Democrats.
I think, Paddy, Adrian, I want to come bring you in here, but Paddy made a really, really good comment there. I see, you know, the other thing, Jed, that region has got is a three-letter word called oil. Oil, follow the money. But anyway, Adrian, do you want to jump in on this one?
There's also a big, massive gas field in the Mediterranean coast off the coast of Israel and Syria. So there is, that's waiting to be explored. And that's part of the reason why they wanted that pipeline shut for Russia, so that they could bring the gas through the Mediterranean, so they could leave Russia out in the cold.
Yeah.
It always boils down to money. And as long as the war machine is making money, and then there's spoils for the others to mop up in between. So the war manufacturers, Raytheon, Lockheed, they make billions from weapons, and then the corrupt politicians go in and siphon off billions from aid and
all the
spoils of war. It's just a grift on a massive scheme.
It's forever wars, isn't it? It's forever wars.
The ordinary people that die and suffer, and we pay to fund this all the time. They just hit us for more taxes. Like the Green New Deal and all that just funds this whole endless...
Yeah. It's just a perpetual grift. That's what it is. It's a perpetual grift. The politicians grow very rich off the back of it. Particularly, Paddy, in your neck of the woods, the American politicians seem to really make money from the war machine. You know, sort of sad.
They're corrupt. They're corrupt as hell, man. They get paid by War is good. War is good business. But war is good business.
We know when Isaac Hayes sang War, What Is It Good For? Well, it's good for profits. Say it again.
That's damn straight. And you want to boost the economy, start a war. That's one of the things I really worry about Biden.
Sorry, I have to say Grantonio has corrected me. Thank you, Grantonio. I should have said Edwin Starr. I know, but you call the musical.
Good God, y'all.
Yeah, I know, it's a great song though. Absolutely great song. But anyway. It looks like World War III is off the agenda for the rest of the week. So it looks like we'll be back here in a week's time, I'm glad to say. I don't want it to be an atomic ashes in a week's time. But John Saunderson says here, sadly, ordinary citizens don't want war, only governments. That's right. And as we've all said, you know, it's the ordinary people that suffer. It's the ordinary people that are suffering in Ukraine and, you know, the whole grift over there. Nobody wants war. Exactly. We need to fight back against what they want. Now, got lots of stuff to talk to. Usual rules apply here this evening, by the way. We've got to 9 o'clock. And then we're finishing, just over whatever that is, 20 minutes or so. But we go for an extra half an hour if there's sufficient coffee beans in the pot. So, yes, Anne-Marie, World War III is postponed for now. Now, here's one. I'll get you all going here. Okay. Nigel Farage. I wanted to talk about Nigel Farage. This will get Jed hopping, I reckon. Now, we'll try and see how he goes in this one. So, some really interesting stuff happening here in the British arena in terms of, you know, the Conservatives are somewhat less popular than, you know, typhoid at the moment in the polls. So they're going down the tubes. The Reform Party is going up and it's sitting at, I think, about 16% in the poll. And Nigel Farage keeps telling us, like he did, I think, in the past day or so, he's thinking about potentially a return, but maybe not to frontline politics, certainly not to the Conservative Party as it is at the moment. Right, what does that mean, Nigel? Are you going to return or not? And this is my point. And Jed, I'm coming to you on this one first. You know, I think Nigel Farage is a remarkable politician. I think he has charisma. I think he connects with people. I think some of the stuff he can talk about is brilliant. And I wouldn't trust him further than going to my front door. And I understand why, Jed. Just the final thing, Nigel. He suffered so much, you know, so much persecution. There was a helicopter crash and all. I wonder what was behind that. So much. So he's gone through so much. So if he wants to take a back seat and make money from media, Jed, I don't blame him. But I just think that, you know, he's not going to be coming back into front line. It's all just a tease. Jed.
Right. Where do I start? Okay. I've said this. If I said it once, I have said it 100 times, and I am not a man that exaggerates. Okay?
I told you that a million
ever. I must have said it a million times, that, but anyway. Anyway, but the point is, David, right, my standing argument with this, I think Farage has achieved more when he wasn't, in theory, a mainstream politician than any mainstream politician has ever done in the last 40 years. Yeah.
True.
By being a great campaigner. He's a great campaigner. He's a great one issue, two issue campaigner. Yeah. Whether it be the EU, whether it be migrant boats, whatever it may be, he's a great single issue, maybe dual issue advocate. Now, I want to take that word back because I hate that word. So anyway, I'll take that word back and you substitute your own. But will he come back to frontline politics? I don't know. Do Reform need a Nigel Farage as its leader? Absolutely. Or the other guy, the deputy leader, whatever he's called. I agree with you with Tyce to a degree. But the point I've always tried to make on this podcast and on other shows, whether Charlie likes it, is it Charlie? Whether Charlie likes it or other people like it or not, is I want a Conservative Party to run this country. And I mean a Conservative Party, not a party called Conservative. And I can't have that. And because I've got a choice between blue and red. And in fact, if I close my eyes, I couldn't tell the difference between them. So I want a part, I can't do anything else other than say, right, I either don't vote, I spoil my paper. Well, both of them are irrelevant, absolutely irrelevant. So the only other thing I could do, could I then vote for Labour? Absolutely not, over my dead body. Could I vote for the Tories as they stand? Absolutely not, over my dead body. But what I can do is send a message. And I can send a message to the Tory party to say, you are not Conservative anymore. You are just equal as Labour. You are just as left-wing, you are just establishment, you are just net zero, you are just whatever, you are just woke, you are just trans, you are just name any of the current buzzwords. And they are exactly the same as Labour. But what I can do with my vote is say, right, I will give it to Reform Party. Although they are not perfect, what I would, because if I don't, the bottom line is, if 100 people vote in the general election, Labour are going to get about 80 of them, and the Tories will get about 20 of them. And Labour will get in, and we will be under the jackboot for 5 or maybe 10 years. But what I can do with my vote is say, well, actually, I'll give it to Reform. Reform won't get in. It won't get an MP. It won't do anything. But what I can do is take another 10 votes away from the Tories. So the Tories don't go, we lost X amount of seats or X amount of votes to Labour. What they'll say is, we lost 70% or 80% of our votes to Labour and 10% of our votes to Reform. That's how you can send a message by voting for somebody else, even though you know that somebody else will not get in and that somebody else is not really what you want. But you can tell the party that you really want to have, the Tories, hey, listen, these are the sort of policies I'm looking for from you. And I will give you my vote next time, but I'm not this time. Luke, give it to them to show you, to give you a kick in the gonads, to say, book your ideas up and become Conservative again.
Okay, Jed, okay, understand that. I don't agree, but I understand that. Or I don't agree only in the sense of, as you know, I'm much more cynical about, well, the Reform Party. One of the things about Reform, and Grant Tony, I'll come to you, and then Adrian, you in this one, then you, Paddy, that order. Reform have recently stood down a number of prospective parliamentary candidates, Grant Tony, because an organisation called Hope Not Hate, which is an extreme left organisation, hate organization, despite the name, basically did a hit job on these people, and they said, oh, look at these people, they've put out hurty tweets. So this is the sort of people that Richard Tyce wants, and Richard Tyce, one by one, took them down. And Hope Not Hate, not so many years ago, did a hit piece on me, right? So I know Hope Not Hate, and I've done it in most other people that I know that have been around for a bit. Anyone on the right at all who's any sort of stature, they come after them. That is my view on Hope Not Hate. Richard Tice bowed down to them. Grantonio, he groveled to them. So that's one of my problems, Grantonio.
Right, so Hate Not Hope, or whatever they're called. Pathetic bunch of lowlifes, are possibly the most powerful, what would you call it, protest group, interest group, yes, in the country. So there you go. So that just belies this need for voting and change. I was trying to say this a couple of weeks ago. You won't get change through the ballot box. It's the likes of people like Graham Linehan and J.K. Rowling that are creating change for good. So maybe we should have more faith in that kind of stuff. And I just don't have much faith in ticking a box and parties who will, as you say, grovel, who will bow down to the slide. I mean, I don't even know. I think one of the chaps that they sacked, he said something derogatory towards Scots or something like that. Like to think our nation has a slightly better.
But this is the point, Grantonio. Listen, if you grovel to this Hope Not Hate mob, and you're not even in office, what the heck are you going to do when you're in office? It's going to be even worse because you'll get much more pressure put on you. I mean, I get what Jed's saying, Jed. I think a different leader might have responded differently and not groveled, but Tice did grovel, and I think that's unforgivable. Jed.
But you're missing my point. I'm not voting because I want reform. I'm voting to take another vote away from the Tories to become Conservative. We're not going to get reform. Reform, we're not going to win any seats. Tice isn't going to be a leader of a party sat with MPs in Parliament. He's not. It's a simple fact. But what I can do is take a percentage away from the Tories even more. If I don't vote, I've wasted my vote. If I do vote, who do I vote for? Well, I can't vote for Labour and I can't vote for the Tories.
Hang on.
I can take a percentage away from the Tories and just say, stick it up you Tories, look what I've done with my vote.
Thanks for the cake, John Saunderson. That's really appreciated. Thank you. We're getting closer to the 2,000 we need, by the way. So we're in 14 at the moment. Another 600 of these beans, and that enables it to go for 30 more minutes. I want to come back to you on that. You see, if you don't vote, if let's say you were a traditional Conservative voter and you don't vote for the Conservatives, never, and you don't vote at all, right? How is that any different for voting for reform?
Out of the number of people that cast their vote, Labour will probably win 80% of them, and the Tories will probably win 20%. But if I don't vote, they'll still get 80% and they'll still get 20%. But if I do vote, then I've added to the percentage pool and I've passed it to somebody else. And that percentage has to come from either the 80 or the 20. And if it comes from the 20, then I can say, Tories, look, that's what I've done with my vote. I give it to somebody, but not you. So, because if 10 people vote in the general election and 8 are for Labour and 2 for Tories, it could be 10,000 that vote and 8,000 are for Labour and 2,000. You see what I'm getting at? But if I then take what would have been a non-vote, i.e. I throw it in the bin and say I'll give it to a third party, I've taken it from one of the others, other two men's. That's my point.
I hear your point. Adrian, you've been sitting there very silently and very patiently. What's your take on all of this?
As for Farage, is he the man to rebuild Britain? I don't think so. I don't think he wants that job. I think he's got it too cushy as a political commentator now. And he doesn't have to do too much as such, but he can keep himself in the mix. The next Prime Minister has a hell of a job on him, because Great Britain is not great anymore and the kingdom is certainly not united. No. And the country needs rebuilt from the bottom up. Is Farage that man? I don't think so. I don't think he wants that, because if he's too much to lose.
But I agree 100%. But does that not speak to Grantonio's point that maybe we certainly all agree here probably we need a revolution, but it's not going to come from political parties, I don't think. I think it could come from the ground up. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. Paddy, you guys had a revolution a while back.
That's where all revolutions start. War starts when your government tells you who the enemy is. Revolution starts when you work it out for yourself.
Now, revolution starts when you realize you're governing the enemy.
Yeah, that's basically what I just said. Revolution starts when.
You got 700 million.
Like I said, you gotta speak American. You gotta speak American, Grant. You gotta remember, I'm handicapped here.
Yeah, Paddy, remind us how many guns you guys have over there.
7 million in the hands of civilian population.
Yeah, but I can strike it off my bingo card now. Well done, Paddy.
There you go. Take a shot.
Paddy, we're gonna play City Troll Bingo every week.
There you go. There's certain consistent points.
Well, Paddy, yes, that's your fair argument. But I mean, Adrian, I just want to let you finish your piece on that there. I mean, I kind of take your line on it. I do understand Jed's point as well. But, you know, I think Nigel Farage has been through so much, Adrian, and I don't blame him for not wanting to come back. And I don't think he's the person who's going to restore Britain.
No, like, look at the 650 politicians that represent us as a nation. There's not one of them I would trust with rebuilding this country in any shape or form. There's not one of them.
Can I jump in again? I know I don't normally do this and jump in, but
you never did yet.
However, I watched. One day you'll meet me, Adrian, and you'll love me like everybody else. But I watched Trust with an. I watched Liz Truss do an interview with I think it was Nigel Farage the other night, and I was quite impressed actually, because I think one of her overriding points was that, irrelevant of what you think her premiership was for the 30 odd days or whatever it might have been, it's irrelevant. I think that's irrelevant. I think the biggest thing I got from what she said was, no matter who the government is, and it's a point I've raised many times, and it's a point we've discussed many times, but no matter who the government is, the people that control this country are the civil service. And she just kept saying, I kept coming up against, not just the Prime Minister, who didn't agree with her, but it was the civil servants pushing back. The civil servants not actually doing the job that they're paid to do, which is to support government policy. It was actually pushing back on government policy and hindering government policy at every single turn. That is the problem we have to deal with. I think we can deal with a Labour Party, we can deal with the Conservative Party or whatever it might be. I think we can live with that if the government of the day can get whatever policies it said it's going to do through. And it can't do that, particularly, well, I'll rephrase that. A Conservative / right-wing government can't do that because the civil service is heavily left-wing and will fight it at every opportunity. And it will hold it up and delay and delay and delay. I'm telling you now, when Labour gets in, you've said they will, and I think they will too. When Labour gets in, you watch hundreds and hundreds of bits of legislation fly through and get signed off and done instantly, almost as a blur. Why? Because it's being backed by the civil service. And that is the problem. If we get a true Conservative government at one stage in our future, it needs to wipe the civil service off the map, because they are the cancer eating this country.
Right, Grantonio?
Thank you. I agree with Jed, but I'd say that the problem runs a bit deeper. It's not just the civil service. It's the judiciary. It's the media. It's the education. It's the education system. I just think that the problems are so much deeper.
and voting, even if reform were to hypothetically somehow get in, nothing's going to change here. We just need something a bit deeper. And like Adrian was talking about, a revolution, I think, is the answer. And that will come when there's an economic crisis, which will probably be in the next 5 years, the way they're spending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that's going to come. An economic crisis is coming, Grantonio, on Paddy's side of the pond in the States and here as well, because, as you say, the financial thing is just, it's just bubbling away, the volcano. That's why they like the wars. You see, war is a really good way of covering up the economic catastrophe that's happening. Adrian talks about the coming food shortages as well. So yes, Farmer D, it's also time. Good. Yeah, sorry, Adrian, do you want to go?
Economist magazine, May 2022. Go and look at it. Unfortunately, you can't share images on this, but it's like sheaves of wheat. And when you zoom in on the sheaves of wheat, each like piece of wheat is in the shape of a skull. Now, we know the Economist is the left-leaning magazine, but they always tell you. And they put that out in May 2022.
I tried to look at those photographs, yeah. Adrian, but the images were too grainy.
Okay. I do.
Grantonio, come on. Come on. It's me that does the naft.
That was corny.
Oh, God. All right. Ding, 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 ding. I'm going to have to get a bell or something to ring it at the point where we need to shift along. Okay. Well, look, folks, thanks everyone who's contributed. We're going to keep going for another half an hour. And okay, here's something I want to talk to you about. There's a couple of topics I want to go on about. So puberty blockers, I'll start with this one. I think puberty blockers are wicked. I think they should be criminalized. I think any government or any authorities that push them on anyone under the age of 18, for sure, should be behind bars. And we've now got a situation in the UK where the British government has basically said, yes, we need to restrict the use of these things. And there's all kinds of outroar. Adrian, here in Northern Ireland, there's been an outroar about it. We have to think of the trans kids. Spoiler alert, there's no such thing as trans kids. It just shocks me that puberty, that there's even a discussion about this. There's nothing to discuss. Puberty blockers are wrong. So is, you know, the genital mutilation that goes on, chopping off bits and bobs of younger people or getting them into that set. It's all wrong. It's actually profoundly evil. That's what I take on it anyway. Grantonio, do you want to jump in on this one? Puberty blockers, I just think a total ban, that's it.
I couldn't agree more, and I imagine 99% of the population would absolutely agree. I mean, I don't think we quite know what the long-term effects of these. I understand that they're not very good for bones, puberty blockers. So I just wonder what's going to happen with all these people that have taken them. You know, 20 years time, what kind of side effect? Well, I say 20, could be in the next couple of years, actually. It's really sad. But again, it's just the disconnect between the media and the authorities and the average person. The idea that puberty blockers should be prescribed to children and vaccines as well. I'm with you, David. I think you'd be hard pressed to find anybody outside of the media who isn't.
Well, it's the people in the political salons as well, Adrian. And if we zoom back here into our wee quarter of the earth, I've noticed, for example, several, the likes of the Alliance Party here in Northern Ireland, the likes of Sinn Féin as well, wriggling around it, trying to sort of say, no, we mustn't, we must be much more sensitive about puberty blockers because they can do it. They can be useful. No, they can't. They have no use at all, apart from destroying young people. And I mean, what people do once they're, Adrian, past the age of consent, that's their business. I don't care. Knock themselves out. But before that, no, it's black and white for me. Adrian.
You have to remember, Belfast has been selected to be a WEF smart city.
Mm, yeah.
So Alliance and Sinn Féin are full on board with all that, first and foremost. But yeah. See, instead of spending money on these puberty blockers, that money should be given to those kids to be given full mental health therapies, to be properly assessed so that they can go through, like, mm-hmm. you know, speaking to a psychologist and they can get help. And if after, you know, 3-4 years, they're still adamant that they're wanting to do this, by that stage, hopefully there'd be a team and make their own decision. But that money should be spent on mental health to try and speak to these kids first before they mutilate and sterilize their body that can never be reversed.
100%. I agree with AD.
The parents need psychological assessment as well, because are they fueling this at home?
It's child abuse, Adrian. It's child 100%. Abuse. Yeah. I just wanted to say, but when I mentioned the media, and you said, but that's the politicians as well, David, it's interchangeable as far as I'm concerned. When I say the media class, it's...
Yeah, you're right. Anne-Marie says here that these puberty blockers are taking can cause cancer, heart disease. This is a disaster for health. Yes, Anne-Marie, I'm sure they do. I mean, Paddy, do you want to jump? Yeah, I'm just bringing you in, Paddy, right now. Jumping in this one. I mean, I just think there should be a complete ban. End off.
There should be a complete ban, and there should be a complete overview of this agenda. The problem is, here in the United States anyway, is that for the last 10 to 15 years, this has been the agenda passed on in the public school system. It is the teachers that have encouraged this, and see that they've weaponized the children against their parents and tell them, "Yo, Johnny, you're really Jane." And it's, you know, and Jane, you're really Johnny, because, you know, there are no tomboys anymore. There are no, you know, so what, you're a guy that, you know, you played Barbies with your G.I. Joes. Who cares? You're attracted to male, you're a guy attracted to men, or you're a woman attracted to women. Who cares? But that doesn't mean you're a wrong person in a wrong body. And this has been perpetuated in the United States anyway, by our education class. And it's like, we've got a full generation that have been mentally damaged, in except the fact that if you want to be gay, and God bless you, be happy, but don't damage your body. These people, I mean, I fight this argument in my own family, and it's just like, you're hurting yourself. Just be happy who you are.
Well, look, Paddy, just on this one, because I'm going to give this one a bit of time so everyone can jump in. But, you know, this to me, it's not so much about the sort of the lesbian and gay side of things. It's about bodily mutilation.
It's, you know, damaging the physical body. You do not need to damage your physical body. You do not need to damage. You can have your political agenda. You can have your sexual agenda. Just leave your body to hell alone. Our bodies are fragile enough. We don't need to manipulate them.
Irreversible damage as well, Paddy. Irreversible.
Yes.
Well, have any of you seen the photographs of the, it's horrific stuff, of the skin grafts that they, I mean, and the other thing is, I like to criminalize the doctors who carry, the surgeons who carry all this stuff out. I've seen the skin grafts where they take the skin, big lumps of skin off, you know, kids' like legs or their arms, and they use that to create other bits in their genital area, you know. And you see stuff like, I saw a story the other day about someone who's transitioning, and they were saying that they, although they were transitioning, they still wanted to have the male bits, but with the new plastic female bits. And Gauram, that's it in a word. One word sums it up. It's satanic. It's possessed. There's Jed. I mean, what are you, you know, there, yes, we know that they're mixed up, but there's some absolute moral things, Jed, you know, and that is, prescribing puberty blockers for anyone under the age of consent is just obscene.
It is. I remember first do no harm, and chopping a child's bits and pieces off, or trying to, you know, super glue other bits on that weren't there originally. But I think it was Adrian that mentioned it about, well, let's put the money into these mental health services. Now, what we've got to ask ourselves is why we have such a mental health crisis at the moment, not just as perhaps traditionally it was with perhaps older men, older women who'd lived a bit, who'd had, you know, complicated lives, et cetera, find themselves, you know, on hard street, so to speak, or whatever the terminology is, and life has thrown them a shit deck of cards. What we've actually got is children with serious mental health illnesses. And I tell you where this comes down from, and I tell you where this starts. And we are using it tonight. It starts with your Twitters, your Twitches, your Snapchats, and your TikToks and things like that. That is what's causing the mental health crisis. That is what's perpetuating this. And I agree, the words that have been used by other people, satanic, evil, whatever you want to throw at it. Oh, whatever you want to throw at it, that's what it is. It's not godly. It's not true. It's not holy. It's not clean. But the point is, why are these children? Now, you could say, well, it's parents. But these parents that we have now that are pushing this ideology to these children are, in theory, only 10, 15 years ago, were children themselves. Yeah, we are talking about adults at the moment pushing it to their kids that are between, what, 25 and 35? So go back 15 years, they were 15 years, they were teenagers. So they started off with the ideology. And the problem we've got is ideology feeds ideology, or doctrine feeds doctrine. And I know all about doctrine because the military has doctrine, and it force feeds it down your throat day in and day out for 22 solid years. But the point is, it is doctrine, and that's what we're getting. So when we talk about putting money into healthcare or mental health for children, we've got to understand what's pushing it, and it's the adults and it's social media. If we turned off social media, turned off the internet tomorrow, and eventually in 1, 2, 3, 4 years' time, children will go back to being children. Children will play in the street on the bikes. They'll play bally. They'll play Kirby. Yeah. They'll do everything and anything. They'll make trolleys and go down the street that they've made out of pram wheels and a bit of wood, like I did when I was a kid. And they'll do all those things. The reason they don't do those things is TikTok, Twitter, and Twitch, and all the other garbage that they watch.
Paddy, do you want to come back on that?
Yeah, because I totally disagree in one sense. The reason that this stuff is effective, Jed, is because they've taken away morality and God. Bring back in morality, bring back in God, or even if you don't believe in God, just bring back in morality. And it doesn't matter what crap you throw at them. They'll look at it with a moral eye and say, no, that's just wrong. And it's, you know, we need all the information we can get. We need the communication lines open. But we no longer teach our children right and wrong. I'm sorry, Johnny, you're not Jane. We need to find out why you feel you are and make you understand that you're not.
Paddy, the point is, it's social media that's helped fulfill that, what you're saying. That's taken the godliness away. It's taken morality away. It's social media and that instant gratification. We want instant gratification constantly. We want to scroll, look to see who's liking us, look to see who's commenting on us, look to see who's giving us a thumbs up or a heart. We do it on this program. We say, smash the heart button, give us your beans. And I'm not disrespecting you, David, but we do it ourselves. But when you do it to a child's mind that's not developed, what is that going to say? Instant gratification. Oh, you want to be Johnny and you're not Jane anymore. That's fine. We'll give you gratification on Twitter, on Twitch, and on.
But it's because we hold the adults that set this all up to the basics of morality. Is where it starts. You know, there's always been porn. There's always been radical thought. There's always been these things. But it used to be there were adults. There were people who knew that things were right, and there was a difference between right and wrong.
You're right. Lost
right and wrong.
You're right, Paddy. You're right. But the people bringing up the children today are those that 15 years ago
were already 20
years ago.
Yeah.
We're all contaminated with social media when the internet exploded. I am of the generation, probably, in fact, I'm trying to think back now, even my children, most of them were born when we had internet. And that's the point. The children that were born when they had internet are now parents. And therefore, they're feeding their children the social media habits that they had. And they don't see morality like we see. Those people that didn't have internet when they grew up, people like me, you, David, I don't know how old Adrian is. I know Grantonio's a bit younger because I've seen his image, but he's a nice lad. But the point is, generally, those that have never known anything other than the internet are the ones feeding the children what they're feeding them now, which is more and more social media, internet bullshit.
And it is right. BS. Yeah. And not only that, Jed, it's the messages that come from the media about how the world is going to end any second now. The left like to laugh at conspiracy theorists with their tinfoil hats, but they're the ones who are constantly pushing this idea that the world's going to end in the next few years because we're all going to, I don't know, drown or boil or whatever it is. They change their minds all the time. Imagine the impact that that's having on a young child's life, knowing that the world's going to end. Well, of course it's going to end. The BBC have just told me, David Attenborough has just told me that the world's going to end. The other thing is video games. And I 100% agree with you about the social media. But you imagine these kids just somebody at work not long ago telling me that their younger brother played, get this, video games 12 hours a day. And throw into that, excessive use of drugs, cannabis, and all sorts of things. And then of course it's the diagnosing of made up illnesses. Well, you've got hyperattention. Activity disorder or whatever it's called. Well, you're basically spirited. So how are you going to deal with it? Well, you're just going to give them a load of drugs like Ritalin. And we are creating these problems. Again, ticking time bomb. We have a massive ticking time bomb, mental health crisis, if indeed it's not already happening, but a huge thing around the corner. And we are not going to be able to cope. I mean, I'll just anecdotally, I think we all remember walking through any city centre, and that one time you saw somebody running through the city, talking to themselves, laughing or shouting or whatever, that was an event. Not anymore. There's a huge mental health crisis happening. There's lots of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. Absolutely right. Okay, listen, we're in the last 15 minutes or so of the show, so I want to shift it on a little bit if I can. And I want to finish off by having to sadly tell you all that monkeypox, very, very serious affliction, even though it doesn't exist. Monkeypox is back. And apparently did anyone see the story? There was a village in the Congo, and I think it was the Congo, somewhere like that anyway. And anyway, there was an alleged outbreak of this monkeypox, and it's even more super duper infectious than the first one. And some experts were saying this could be another global pandemic. And of course, everyone here I see all the icons coming up, the monkey icons. Monkeypox is back, Leslie. I'm sorry to break it to you. And it could be a global pandemic. And thank God the World Health Organization, as we speak, is just finishing off putting the gloss, Adrian, on the Global Pandemic Accord. Don't call it a treaty, call it an accord, which gives the WHO the ability to declare a pandemic whenever the hell it wants. Adrian, what did you reckon of the return of monkeypox, Gigi Law, post a banana? Back, Adrian.
I already have it marked off my bingo card, so can I mark it down again? I don't know the rules. What way does this work?
Yes.
I was sort of hoping Disease X was going to pop out because that was me. I was ready for winning. Look, it's election year. Time to be the conspiracy theorist. I think they will try something so they can use the mail-in ballot system again. Monkeypox would be very convenient. But again, just another grift. The fear, control, push jabs. Basically, they haven't given up on the Great Reset. You have to remember that. Even though Schwab's on his deathbed, thank God, there will be other people still trying to push that agenda.
I think you're right. They haven't given up on it, Grantonio. You know, like you would have thought, well, maybe you know, this is a naive statement. You would have thought that after COVID's been well and truly taken apart by some of us, they would leave that. But no, and monkeypox was laughed out of court. Nobody took monkeypox seriously, but yet, they're still, as Adrian says, Grantonio, they're still trying to can we fly this flag? You know, would this kite fly if we talk about it in very serious voices? Can they? Do you think they could ever get monkeypox away as actually a global pandemic?
Well, they're talking about, you know, monkeypox coming back, and we're waiting for monkeypox. Well, I'm still waiting for COVID, to be honest. I don't know about you guys. I tried desperately to catch COVID back in the day, two or three years ago. Is it 4 years ago now? I tried to get it. I'll just think I'll get it now. And I'm being serious. I'll get it, and then I'll get an immunity to it. Couldn't get it. Couldn't get it at all. And the other thing is, do you remember the supermarkets with the time when there were stickers on the floor with arrows? People thought that was going to save us all. And there was all this propaganda about the NHS staff workers who were doing their little TikTok dances and how they were so wonderful and they've been helping us and saving us. But that, you know, but hang on, it was the people working in Asda and Tesco and Sainsbury's and all the supermarkets who were on the front. Sorry, I'm laughing. They were on the front line, so they were the ones who were most exposed to this COVID thing. Nobody got it. Nobody got it. So the monkeypox one, I mean, it's like the climate one as well. The Scottish government have had to backtrack on certain targets that they said they were going to, and they'll keep pushing these targets back. They'll keep pushing the moving the goalposts. Come on, we need something different. I'm looking forward to something a bit more creative from.
Well, I think, as Adrian said, you know, if you look on your scorecard for things that would come up, I mean, they've talked about Disease X, and that's insane. And now they've talked about monkeypox, but this time it's back and it's much more infectious.
Remember bird flu?
But that's what I'm saying, Grantonio. You know, you can tell that, Paddy, they are trying to try. I mean, and the election year thing is not insignificant as well. Yeah. They're trying to bring something. Swine, as Max says here, swine flu, bird flu, monkeypox.
They just killed 2 million chickens for, you know, this. Bird flu that's coming out and everything else. And all they did was eggs, which have already gone up 400%, now went up 500%. So, they may be able to pull this vaccine routine again over there on that side of the pond. And I don't mean a last straw and an unnecessary push over here. Right now, they're trying to maintain the civility. The United States Senate just said, don't matter that Mayorkas has broke the law. We're not going to have a trial. The rule of law no longer applies in the United States.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
So it's like, you know, they're worried about this powder keg exploding. Let's go into bingo, double bingo. The 700 million guns that are in the hands, they're really worried though about the powder keg. No, everybody's scared to death over what's going to happen with this election. There's more people holding their breaths over here, and the last thing they're going to do is push. They don't dare try to use the flu, the vaccine, pox, whatever this time. That's they know that that's a non-starter to begin with here. Yeah. So I don't know what's coming, but something's
there
coming.
There was an outbreak of bird flu in the local prison here, but they couldn't work out which wing.
Can I just point a couple of things out? In 2003 with SARS, with 2004 with bird flu, I think 2009 was H1N1, 2014 was Ebola, obviously with COVID, we've had monkeypox. It's the same fear, just different year, if you know what I mean.
And that, yes, Adrian. And that's why I urge everyone to tune in to my live show that Jed will be producing for me on Monday night. We've got Don Lester and David Parker, the author of a brilliant book. I've had them on before, What Really Makes You Ill. That's what the book's called, What Really Makes You Ill. And they are brilliant on the whole fake vaccine, fake virus narrative, which underlies all of this. You know, Ebola might, Paddy, maybe Ebola is a thing. I don't know.
Marburg virus is a real thing, and we've been lucky that it's not really jumped from the monkeys, you know, the simian branch of our
That's only
our
because
species.
Fauci hasn't had enough funding yet to make it.
Yeah, done. He hasn't had it. Yeah. Yeah, hasn't been able to get his fingers into it yet. But it's like that one scares the crap out of me because that just dissolves you from the inside. It's like a germ version of radiation.
Well, it doesn't scare me remotely because I'm convinced there is no such thing as any virus. But anyway, listen, tune in Monday night and you'll listen to David and Don, who are much more knowledgeable about these matters when we talk about this. But I just thought...
Sorry to interrupt. I think we actually need to be more worried about parasites than viruses in our body. Yeah.
Yes, the parasite arc.
We never talk about that. You know, it's always viruses and not there, but we never talk about the long-term damage that parasites do.
Well, actually, those of you who listen to my live show will be aware of the fact that I've had on my good friend, the gut doctor, Dr. David McCollum, from here, from Northern Ireland, actually. And David and I, we meet up very regularly, and he is convinced that, very much, Adrian, that parasites are the things that cause cancers and that cause so many of the problems that affect the body.
I like the sound of that. And do you know what? This is why they don't want hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin out, because they block cancer pathways. And yeah. Ivermectin is used to kill parasites in animals.
Well, maybe what I'll do is I'll bring David back, Adrian, and we can do a show on parasites, because there's a definite thing there, and a lot of people say that's why ivermectin was so effective and therefore was banned.
People go to the doctor and the doctor will just treat them for something. The doctor doesn't think about a parasitic infection, and that's the problem. It's never on a doctor's radar because people think parasites are like a tropical disease, but you pick them up from animals in everyday thing. And they are causing the long-term health problems that doctors are mistreating, and that's part of the problem.
In fact, well, this is why, actually, maybe I'll definitely do this, because one of the things David said to me is, I don't know if any of you folks on this here like eating bacon, but apparently bacon, because pigs are susceptible to parasites, so therefore, you know, if you have bacon or sausages, whatever, this is how the parasites can enter our human body.
Right, stop now, David. Stop now. How dare you? Yeah. I will believe any conspiracy theory you throw, any tinfoil hat, but you attack bacon and sausages, you're finished with me. I'm telling you now, we've had it all. We've had swine flu, we've had bird flu. You're telling me about now bashing my monkey. That meant something completely different to me at one stage. But now we're talking monkeypox. And the thing is, don't you dare take everything from me. Take my home, take my money, take my life, but take my bacon, and I'm coming.
I'll be standing right beside him.
Can I just say that when David suggested this to me, I think we were having a bacon sandwich each. So, I mean, you know, it's just, but it's the broader topic that Adrian brought up, which I do think is interesting. And that is the whole parasite thing. Because as you say, we can beat viruses to death. I think we've got the arguments for that. But people still do get diseases, you know, and we haven't had time to talk about tonight about Princess Catherine and all of that there, which we have done in previous shows. But people still become unwell. And is trying to understand what causes that. Grantonio, I see you there.
Very quickly, just wanted to jump in. You were chatting about live streams that you were doing. Very quickly, that Gregory Martin one was extraordinary. I loved every second of that. And can I just, you know, recommend that to anybody listening if they can catch that Gregory Martin one? It was phenomenal. Get him.
Oh, Gregory and I will be speaking tomorrow. You'll be pleased to know, Grantonio. We're going to have a chat tomorrow about stuff. And it's trying to bring, I just want to bring you guys different voices and different things that hopefully you'll find interesting. You know, like recently we have done transhumanism, we've done astrology, you know, we've done viruses, and we're just trying to cover as many bases as possible, I guess. But someone says, I've got a legit site for ordering ivermectin that I've used 3 times if anyone needs some. Yeah, isn't it a disgrace, by the way, that we can't, We can't get, or it's hard to get ivermectin. But there's a reason for that, Nath, because it works. You see, that's the problem. That's why they don't want us to have it. Adrian wants to know, can Gregory tell us when Charles is going to die? Want to get a few quid on it? I'm not going down that rabbit hole tonight. I can save that to next week. And Gauram saying, can you get Neil Oliver on the live stream? Well, that actually is another thing to say. For those of you who are interested, we are working away feverishly in the background to put together the next live event. Now, I know some of you guys were at the one Jed and I were at in March, the 1st of March. Trying to get one away. We're having a few, what we could say, technical issues with venues. I'll not go into it, but I'm aware of a particular venue in London that has rejected our proposed next venue, so next event. So it won't be in London, long story short. It's going to be up north, and I will not say no Grantonio, it's not the Albert Hall, but it was somewhere that I'm very, very disappointed in. But anyway, that's stuff them. We're gonna put on another live event. It's gonna have two great people. Can't say who they are, but we've got them agreed that it's trying to get a venue. Grantonio says do some. We've gotten terrible echo here. It's Gauram. It's going to be, let's say, closer to Manchester than anywhere else. Hopefully, but nothing confirmed yet. And once it's confirmed, will it be in Bradford? When hell freezes over, former day, I think I would need police protection to go to Bradford. But anyway, just let you guys know that there is another live event. It's in planning process. We've got the great guests lined up, and they'll be great fun. Really, really good. But the venue. So by the way, if anyone listening to this can think of any venue that would hold a couple of hundred people, then get in contact with me and be cancel proof. But what we found is that London is not to be trusted. And I'm not referencing the venue we've been to before, which I'm not going to mention on air, but that venue is fine as far as it goes. They haven't refused us. It's another venue which probably many people here would be familiar with, and they didn't like the two guests, who are totally non-controversial in my book. And Jed knows who they are. So anyway,
can I just add in, the video that was referred to, the Gregory Paul Martin, I've shown it up on screen for those watching. Get over, give it a watch. It's a good, interesting video, as all yours are, David. But I now have the facility. Sometimes when people mention on tonight's programme, I can pull up that imagery or that video for those that actually watch the show rather than just listen, just so they can see it visually and go and watch.
I can confirm that, Nath, that it wasn't Imperial College London. It was. I like the suggestions coming out. No, it wasn't Wembley Bloody Mosque. It wasn't the O2. The different suggestions. It was a place that will remain nameless at this point in time, but as you may tell from my tone, I'm not best happy about it. No, Grantonio, I'm having a private phone chat with Gregory tomorrow. Gregory actually, believe it or not, has spoken to me about doing a subsequent show on one of my very first rabbit holes I went down, which was the fact that I do not believe for one second that the man from Stratford wrote the Shakespeare plays. I believe it was Edward de Vere. Gregory Martin is very into this, very into this. So we're going to have a show on the Shakespearean authorship, because that fascinates me. And actually, what I didn't realize, folks, when I first went down that rabbit hole and started to find things out, I didn't realize that, you know, I just thought, okay, so they've managed to get this one away on us. But if you think about it, they've pulled off one of the biggest scams ever in history, the biggest literary scam in history, and they got away with it, right? Most people are 100% certain, oh yeah, it was the guy from Shakespeare that can't read or write. He definitely did all the plays, right? So then that makes you think, right, what other things in history do you take for granted that are actually completely bogus?
History is 90% lies, man. Come on, man.
History is run by the victors, isn't that's it? Right. Just like war is run by the victors. All I'll say, David, is bright eyes. You are Watership Down. Guys, you don't know the half of it. He doesn't mention half of it on his streams. But when I talk to David, the rabbit hole he's got, in fact, the rabbit hole is so big, it's one big hole. It's not several little ones or dozens of little ones. It's so many, it's just turned into one big rabbit hole.
Well, but I'm surprised I haven't developed like bunny ears and whatnot. But
oh, mixed mitosis.
No, I don't believe in viruses. So, right, everybody, we've reached the end of the allocated time. We've gone over a wee bit. So, listen. As always, I want to thank everybody on the stream for all your comments. It's all so brilliant. It's always a brilliant hour and a half chat. This is my favorite bit of the week. Thank you to Jed, to Paddy, to Adrian, to Grantonio in the studio here. Thank to all of you guys. Thanks for all the coffee bean things that facilitate this. I really appreciate that as well. And the podcast will resume again tomorrow. So be lots of stuff to chat about then as well. Everyone have a great time. Good to see you, my friend Gigi Law as well. I just want to give you a quick shout out over there. Another one of our great American supporters as well. So look, everyone, that's it from me and the team for tonight. We shall return, of course, next week. No problems at all. See you all then. And in the meantime, make it a date on Monday night when we're going to talk again about the whole vaccine virus mythology. So do tune in Monday night, 8 o'clock. That's it, folks. Good night.